Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
All right, Bobby, well, we did have a little bit of downtime to sort of decompress and wait for news of the season to kick off as it relates to the Cowboys. And now that we are within the tag window, we have got a lot to talk about as it relates to Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. Most notably, a report that I shot down, and it wasn't even a report. I think it's important that I point out, and I did try to clarify.
Oh, the report where you said he wants a 10-year contract worth $50 million. I saw you said that. Sorry. I will not. Go ahead, Jane.
I was going to start with the fact that people were ready to move on and replace Dak with Russell Wilson, just because Russell Wilson did what a lot of smart guys do when they want to get out of a place or they are a free agent and want max dollars, they throw in the Dallas Cowboys to the mix. And so it became a talking point last week. And if you didn't hear me on the NFL Network or breaking this down, Bobby, I know you and I can get into this. It was considered laughable by one of my team sources because they are trying in good faith to still get a deal done with Dak Prescott. There's also the fact that Russell Wilson is under contract. They owe him, I believe, $39 million in guaranteed money. So you're telling me Seattle's going to be cool shipping Russell Wilson down to Dallas, another NFC team. Yes, they're going to get some things in exchange, but this has been a team that has made things so expensive and outpriced them on guys like Earl Thomas. They jumped in and went after Jamal Adams when the Cowboys found it too costly to work with the Jets. And then when they came calling, picked up the phone, Stephen Jones, ring, ring. Season's not going that great, but how did you feel about doing something for Aldon Smith? And the phone goes back down. And as I said, he's a free agent this offseason. They're, I'm told, trying to bring him back. They could have gotten a compensatory pick for him and said no. It just tells you that if you're talking to me about that team, that quarterback who's 5 years older and still trying to get something done with Dak, you would agree, knowing what you and I know, that it is laughable. So, Bobby, this is, I know you said you didn't want to get into the Dak fray. You didn't last very long.
I lasted 2 weeks. I think that's a long time for me. 2 weeks of living up to that. And now I got to pay off a bet to like five different people. But I mean, it's fine. I mean, my biggest thing is, outside of everything you just laid out about Russell Wilson and seeing how ridiculous that is, I think that forget just how ridiculous that is. Just look at how difficult is it to acquire that player versus how difficult is it to just sign the damn check with your current quarterback. Just get it done. That is the biggest thing the Cowboys can do, is just get it done. And I know there's always this discussion of, you know, the Cowboys want a victory. They want to win something in the negotiation. I think you're at a point now where you could win the negotiation just by getting it done. Like, public opinion would be on your side if you just get it done, because people are just so tired of it. Just finish it up, get it done. Let's not wait any longer. Just pick up the phone, talk to Todd France.
Well, that's the good news that I have for Cowboys fans, Bobby, is I was told that Stephen and Todd have been talking. And why is that meaningful? When I looked back at my report last year at Combine, there was little to no talking. And when I asked them to characterize how the talks were going, I was told they were good. And I was then said to them, how you feeling versus years past? And it said, it felt a little bit better. Okay. And so given how deeply they've both dug in those cowboy boots, I think that we're seeing some signs of light. And here's also why I add another layer to this. I was told that Dak Prescott's been rehabbing at the Star in Frisco nearly every day. And why is that meaningful? Dak could rehab anywhere he wants. And if you don't want to run into Jerry and Steven or people in the front office, because you're just, it's just gotten so contentious, and if they tag you, you're not going to sign it, you're not going to keep going up to the office.
Oh yeah. And people have not naming a list of names, but I mean, people have done that before in the past. There have been guys who don't want to be around the building and they rehab outside of it. So that's not unusual for those of you who go, well, of course he's rehabbing because he needs to rehab and keeps it. Yeah. But there are lots of guys who choose to rehab outside that building when feelings aren't good. And
so
he's there.
I find that meaningful is my point in saying that. Now, look, it might be a win for both parties to just go ahead and exist with the tag. He gets $37.7 million the minute he signs it. That's guaranteed no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. The Cowboys get another year to assess Dak Prescott, although I would argue, if you look at his record, 42-27 with him, seventh best passer rating in NFL history, tied with Tom Brady. And he's 27 years old.
Yep.
And he's beloved by the guys in the locker room. There's a lot of upside, but if you still need time to evaluate him, which I find that hard to believe, or they wouldn't be giving him the franchise tag. They wouldn't be trying to still get this thing done because it does take up so much of the cap. I mean, franchise tags are costly tags that you use.
Yep.
They both get to play this thing out next year. And the Cowboys assume the risk that Dak balls out, has an amazing year, completely outprices them, or they assign the non-exclusive tag, which would be somewhere around $54.3 million. He's able to shop around to other teams. Cowboys then have to match it. And if they don't, I think they get two first-round compensatory picks.
Well, no, it wouldn't even be compensatory. It'd be wherever those teams finish. So, like, let's say, just as a theoretical team, let's say the Titans went out and signed him. You would basically just get the Titans' next two first-round picks. So wherever it is that the Titans finish. But the downside there is, obviously, if Dak goes and balls out somewhere else, then you're getting, like, back end of the first-round picks, which are basically second-round picks. But, I mean, my biggest thing is...
My point is, I don't see Jerry not having the rights to Dak, because you get something of value from it.
Big risk,
now,
though.
Now, am I wrong in that?
Big risk, though. Because I think if he plays on the tag this year, he's not playing for Dallas next year. There's no circumstance where he wants to be a Cowboy after that, I bet.
I agree. Or you could look at it of... I just think there's risk on both sides. The Cowboys risk losing him to another team the following year because, I mean, 54.3 is absurd for a franchise tag.
Or you risk him actually signing it to spite you, and then you have a $54 million cap number.
Correct. And in 3 years, he makes, what, $123.4 million? Mm-hmm. Or in Dak's situation, he gets hurt again. The team doesn't have a good season. And then what does that do to his leverage and his future in the league? So I actually see risk on both sides, which
I see a great deal more risk on the Cowboys side, though, in that instance. I think there's a better chance that he plays well than he gets hurt again.
Perhaps, but I don't think we ever expected the injury that he was going to have this year. It was on the most ridiculous of runs. It was one of the more gruesome injuries that we've seen in recent years. And it was a setback for him, and it was a setback for the team. And sure, I don't think any of us saw that coming. It was a risk that we literally said, he's been so durable in his career, that's not a possibility. I've just got to think that at least factors into some of this. And so I think, given all of the things that we've outlined, I think we're now at a point where the two sides truly have to give up something they don't want to give up to get a deal done. But I feel like the most encouraging thing, like I said, is I feel, and again, now this is me analyzing me, this is not me knowing, although I do know, talk to some of the people I've talked to.
Oh, you know things.
That Dak wants to be here.
Yeah.
Dak just wants to be respected.
Sure.
And the Cowboys just want some space to structure a deal that allows them to put the pieces around them. So if there can just be some more give, this thing gets done, but I just don't think it's going to be on the timeline that people think.
I see why he doesn't, though, because you buckled, you caved to Ezekiel Elliott. You buckled, you caved to DeMarcus Lawrence. You gave them what they wanted. I've said this before. The last negotiation the Cowboys won was Tyron Smith 7 years ago. They haven't won any since then. And so I think that there's precedent undoubtedly from Todd Francis' end and Dak's end that just says, all right, they're going to buckle. And if they don't buckle, then how much did you really want him? And I think it'd be foolish if the one position they choose not to buckle on a contract, especially with a potentially exploding salary cap where it's going to be nothing, it's going to be peanuts essentially into the future. I think that's silly. And I heard Jeff Kavanaugh and G-Bag Nation say this week, and this is something that I've said before too, is that 2 years ago, the argument was you can't pay him $30 million. Last year, the argument was you can't pay him $35 million. This year, the argument's you can't pay him $40 million. Just figure out what you don't want to pay him now, and that's what you'll be happy with in a year. So just pay the money now and know that in a year you'll be happy with it. I mean, think about, had they just gotten it done, he would have been making $32 million right now. They would have just got it done two summers ago. But they got cute, and they wanted to play games, and they wanted to come in with their, you know, mid-market value in 2019 enough to piss him off to where there wasn't a lot of great feelings heading into 2020. Just stop playing cute. Just get it done. That's what I don't understand.
The best analogy I can give is how I used to approach my credit cards in the past. I have this money from my tax return, so I'm going to apply it to my credit card. Nope. There's that shiny object over there that I really don't need, but I'm going to go spend it on it. In the meantime, my credit card bill is just going to keep going up and up and up because I'm making the minimum payments and the interest rates are going through the roof. When I wouldn't have had to even worry about this if I'd used that dumb money to just pay off my credit card debt.
Just
that's what this feels like.
Pay your quarterback. That's all you got to do. If you pay your quarterback, you win this offseason. Just get that done and stop playing games. I keep saying at every interval, it's going to get done. It's going to get done. It's going to get done. And it's just because I have to believe they can't be this stupid, just to say that directly. They can't be the only team that flubs the quarterback negotiation this bad. And look, there's a history of them pushing things off, like with D-Law and letting things get to a second tag and them waiting into almost the regular season with Zeke. They've got a history of letting things linger a little bit before they get it done. So I'm hoping that's the case here. But if he plays on the tag this year, he's not your quarterback in 2022.
And there's a precedent for that. We've talked about that. Kirk Cousins, Drew Brees, that hasn't gone well for other teams who have done this.
You know what happens when you let Kirk Cousins walk and you don't want to pay Kirk Cousins, which I'm not saying Kirk Cousins is the best quarterback in the world, but I mean, he's a Pro Bowl quarterback. When you don't want Kirk Cousins, you end out trading extra picks to move up in the first round and take Dwayne Haskins and then cut him. You end up making trades to pay Alex Smith and Case Keenum combined $40 million. That's what happens when you don't just give him his $28 million. And so
that's also why I think it's so absurd. Like, if we're going to just come up with absurd theories about how the Cowboys win now, it's not to go get a quarterback that not only are you going to have to give up a lot for, and I'm using Russell Wilson here, you're going to have to give up stuff for. Another team is going to have to pay his $39 million guarantee. But even though he might be a little bit more cap friendly, he is older and you still have to put pieces around him. If you're going to just say Dak's not our guy, then lean into the draft, sign Andy Dalton again, ride with Andy Dalton again, and then develop a guy behind him that you're only going to be paying $400,000 like you paid Dak for 4 years. That to me, like, if Dak truly isn't your guy,
well, and
that's the play, not the Russell Wilson play.
The other example of when you let Drew Brees walk.
Am I wrong on that?
No, I think you're right. The other example though of when you let Drew Brees walk was you had Phillip Rivers in house for a year. But you drafted him. You knew what you were doing. You let him sit behind Brees for a year, and then he went on and had a borderline Hall of Fame career for you. So if the Cowboys had already drafted somebody or they had finished, and that's another thing, is that I feel like if they were really considering moving on from Dak, because again, I got to rationalize this as best I can. If they were really moving on from Dak or contemplating this possibility, do you smash your watermelons and go 6-10, or do you try and go 4-12 and pick third and be in position for Zach Wilson or Justin Fields or one of these top quarterbacks as opposed to where you are, which is now you're in this purgatory spot in the draft where you're not going to be in position for one of the top quarterbacks.
Really good point. That's actually a really good point, because I think it had less to do with pride. If they really weren't in on Dak and they keep talking to us about the money and what they've got to do to get under the cap. If they weren't truly committed to Dak, I agree with you. I think they would have gone all in on Team Tank, said he's damaged goods. We're going to have to like start over. And yeah, they just haven't done that. So I do think that we're going to see, just like I was told, Zeke didn't deserve Todd Gurley money.
Which he didn't. Continue.
I don't. He ended up getting the money. DeMarcus yes. Lawrence. They didn't want to pay him. They ended up paying him. I just think it's going to take Todd picking up the phone a little bit more. I'm not saying he has to kiss the ring, but I think these conversations that they're having may not be meaningful in the context of we have anything to report or get a deal done, but they're meaningful because it, from what I'm being told, it feels like a more positive direction in the past. And again,
which that's good, because literally anything we've heard has been negative. So literally just they're talking and it was kind of positive is a positive. And
which again, sounds like the dumbest nugget, that I'm reporting. But for me, when you've covered the negotiations the way that I have the last 12 seasons, that is actually a meaningful nugget to me.
Which let's think back to the Zeke and D-Law negotiations. We hadn't heard that things were cheery by the time the deals got done. And then we heard, things, we came together and things were good at the last minute or we pushed over the finish line. But there weren't reports of that leading up to the deals getting done. We were still hearing things were contentious. So the fact that we've at least been given a signal that, hey, things maybe aren't as contentious, that already sounds like it's further along than Zeke and D-Law had been at the points when their contracts did get done. The only downside there is we knew at the very least they were having open communication consistently and trading figures with those two. We don't necessarily have that here.
Yeah, I mean, last year covering this literally just felt, I don't want to use the word here, but it felt
exhausting.
Like a contest between men, as you men do. Sword fight,
what's that
so
mean?
To speak.
I don't understand.
A sword fight, so to speak.
Okay, all right.
This
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Feels, again, just based on talking to people that I trust and that haven't steered me wrong and that I don't think use me in contract negotiate like to manipulate contract negotiations for either side. I do trust that it again, it's not enough to be like, I think we're getting this deal done. It's just, it feels more positive.
And that's all you can take.
More constructive.
Take more positivity. And look, the tag deadline's coming up here. They could tag him. He could even sign the tag or whatever else. I mean, and they can still negotiate for the next few months. I think it'd be better the sooner you get this done. I think it'd be best if you could get it done ahead of the draft.
I think it's best so that way you can go in with a clearer picture for the draft. It helps the off-season energy. It gets Dak in the OTAs. It gets, the locker room excited that they could ride with their guy. I don't think this stuff helps your locker room. I don't think it helps the guys to know that the guy that they all believe should get paid and have said that very publicly isn't getting paid. That doesn't make you feel good about.
Well, what does it make you feel about your own future if you wouldn't pay your quarterback? How does it make the Michael Gallup feel about trying to get a contract extension when, boy, they've already got CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper here, so I've already got some competition, and they won't pay our quarterback, who there's really nobody behind, so why are they going to pay me? Why are they going to respect me? It sows unnecessary doubt is all. But it, like I said, it'd be best if they get it done before the draft. And actually, today we're going to be talking a lot of draft with a lot of these prospects. Joining us now is Oklahoma offensive lineman Creed Humphrey. You can follow him on Twitter at Creed_Humphrey. He is training out at Michael Johnson Performance in the Dallas area, and we are excited to have him here today. Creed, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Now, I got to say, you guys won the Joe Moore Award over at Oklahoma in 2019. And I know I'd seen you talking about it, that a big part of that was just the camaraderie. And you thought that, the relationships you guys had and the chemistry was a big reason why you guys were able to do that. How difficult was that this year for you with COVID in terms of just being able to manage that camaraderie and stay close? We heard a lot of that from guys in the NFL that, it was tough to have those same sort of bonds that they would normally have because of how this season went.
Yeah, definitely. It was tough. We weren't, able to go do our usual stuff, like go out to eat all the time with each other, hang out with each other after practice. We kind of had to be isolated from each other whenever we were outside of the facility. So it was definitely a different year, but we did things like Zoom meetings and stuff all the time where we were still being able to connect with each other outside of the facility. So it was definitely different, but it wasn't too hard. We had to get creative with it, but it went pretty well.
All right, my first question out of the gate has to be, where does the name Creed come from? Because I love getting to know you guys separate from what we're going to read and obviously the the college biography and what we're going to hear Daniel Jeremiah and them talk about your intangibles, whatever. I want to get to know you as a person. So we've talked about some of the cooler names over the year that come through draft. I'm not going to forget you. And I would imagine neither are GMs and scouts because it's such a strong first name. Where did Creed come from?
Yeah, you know, my parents never really told me exactly where it came from. I know my dad's a fan of the band Creed, so I'm sure that had some influence on it. But yeah, they never really told me the exact reason why they came up with it.
All right, have you ever listened to Creed? And if so, do you or your father have a favorite song? Because, you know, there is a Cowboys tie in there.
Yeah, you know, I've listened to them. You know, I like the band. I wouldn't say I have a favorite song by them. There's a few that are really good. So, but yeah, you know, they're a good band, so I like to listen to them.
Did you ever watch the Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving performance of him taking off on a cloud of what is now Acro silks for yoga enthusiasts?
Yeah, I've seen that actually. It was pretty cool.
Can we just get a graphic of him just flying?
Yeah, you do. You
need, like, that's what we're going to do now.
It's, you know, as much as I'm surprised, I would never have figured somebody would had Creed as an inspiration, a band inspiration for the child's name. But, you know, at least it wasn't Nickelback or something like that. Now, Creed, I'm curious. You've had so many guys that you've gone up against in the Big 12, big time pass rushers. Who is it that in your career that you faced at Oklahoma you think was, you know, the best player that you've gone against on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, you know, I'd probably say Quinn Williams from Alabama, my redshirt freshman year. You know, he was a great player, you know, a disruptive player. So it was fun to go against a guy like that, especially early on in my career, you know, to challenge myself that season. So it was fun.
What do you think is the biggest thing you learned about football while you were at OU?
Really just how you prepare for a game. You know, you can't walk into a game and not know what the defense is doing. So, you know, I take preparation very seriously. I take film study very seriously because the more I know about the defense, the better idea of, you know, how I can make a call, things like that, how I can pick up a blitz and pass protection. So really just preparation and learning, you know, defensive philosophies.
You know exactly where I'm going with this question, Bobby. We had Daniel Jeremiah on our show once, and one of the more fascinating things that he told us was typically you get in a room and a guy will tell you he's a big film guy. And the best way to check that is to go to the film guy and ask how many different times this player has logged in. So if we were to go to the film guy at OU, how many hours of tape are you logging into each week?
Yeah, a ton. You know, I at least try to do outside of our meeting rooms with the coaches and everything. You know, after practice, I like to try to get at least, you know, 2 hours, if not more, and, you know, depending on how much I have to study for, you know, an exam or anything like that coming up. So I'm trying to get in the film room as much as I can, for sure.
Now, I know at MJP, a big draw for a lot of the offensive linemen there, and a reason why they get so many of the big guys there so frequently is Duke Manyweather. That's somebody, have you trained with him before this year, and why was it important to you go work with him ahead of the draft?
Yeah, this is the first time I've trained with him. I went and attended the O-Line Masterminds conference he does in the summer this past year. And, you know, Duke's just one of those guys, you know, he has such a great idea about football and technique and everything. You can really tell the guys he worked with, how much he improves their game. So that was a big reason why I wanted to come work with him. You know, I've just seen the results it's had with guys. You know, I've talked to Lane Johnson about him. He had nothing but good things to say about him. So that was definitely a big reason why. You know, I just think there's not many guys out there who can train offensive linemen like Duke.
Now, when we talk about, you know, what's the biggest thing you learned about football at Oklahoma, what's the biggest thing you've learned during this process leading up to the draft?
Yeah, you know, Duke's definitely taught us a lot of technique and everything like that. But also, you know, just learning how to take care of your body like a professional. You know, we do so much recovery and rehab stuff throughout the day that it makes you feel fresh every single time you come in here, no matter how hard the workout was the day before. So, really just learning different techniques on how to rehab and recover for the next workout.
When you talk about some of the technique that you've learned, walk us through some of those that you've been able to see there's certain nuances to, or that you've felt an area of improvement for you just in how you line up at the, you know, the line of scrimmage. And, you know, is it your hands? Is it your feet?
Yeah. You know, with Duke, really strains an emphasis on feet work and hands. You know, he says you always win the battle with your feet before you win with your hands. So working footwork technique on different blocks and everything like that is huge for us here. So doing that, you know, I feel like I've definitely improved in that area down here.
When you pop in the tape or when Duke walks, because Duke has worked with, I mean, there's a list of the Cowboys.
Everybody,
players.
The offensive line, all pro team is who he's worked with. Yeah, everybody,
Lyle
pretty
Collins,
much.
Tyron. You know. So when you pop in the tape, who does he say, this is a player that you remind me of, and this is where I want your technique to go? Does he do things like that? And if he does, who does he pop in for you?
Yeah, you know, he doesn't really do comparisons down here for us. You know, he wants us to be the best version of ourselves. So he really strains on what he can see us doing the best, and he strains on those parts of our game to really work on and improve. So he doesn't really have comparisons for us that he's had for me. You know, he just wants me to be the best version of myself.
Now, you are training around the Dallas area, and we do a lot of Cowboys focus here. So have you thought any about the opportunity to play for the Cowboys potentially, or have you had any conversations with them?
You know, we've talked to the Senior Bowl. You know, they have some great players. They've had great offensive lines throughout the years. So, you know, being able to have my name on that list would definitely be awesome. So, you know, they've had such great offensive linemen. You know, they've had great centers there too. So it would definitely be an interesting place to play for me.
Do you see yourself having some position flex on that offensive line, or are you a pure center?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I don't consider myself just a center. You know, I consider myself an offensive lineman and a football player. I don't mind where I line up. You know, I feel like I have the versatility to play just about anywhere on the offensive line.
Now, that's a good question there that I was curious about, was your ability to play guard. Has anybody talked to you about that, that they see you as more of a guard, or has everybody just pretty much focused on center with you?
Yeah, you know, people have asked me if I'm able to play guard. They have so much film in center that, you know, I haven't really played guard in a game, but I've definitely practiced it a ton, you know, throughout the years. So I'm comfortable playing both for sure.
Is there a little bit of it's funny, you always see fans on social media and stuff talking about, you know, well, if we have a hole at right tackle and we have two decent left tackles, let's move the left to right, or we got this tackle, let's just have him play inside, or have the center play guard. Does that ever bug you? I know it seems to bug a lot of offensive line, but the people don't seem to understand the nuances of each one of those spots. Offensive line is not just one position.
Yeah, you know, I don't really focus too much on what people say outside of, you know, the team I'm on. So I've never really noticed it. It definitely takes a lot more than you would think to be able to just change positions, though. I will say that, especially from playing one side of the line to the other side of the line. You know, it's completely different feet work, and it's completely different level of comfort than what you're used to. So it definitely is difficult to do. And, you know, when people do it, it's very impressive.
Now, we know Stephen Jones has a great relationship with Lincoln Riley. We had Lincoln Riley on our show, who wouldn't overcharacterize those conversations ahead of Dallas. But my point is, Stephen can easily pick up the phone and talk to Lincoln about his OU players. Can you characterize what your conversations were like at the Senior Bowl with the Cowboys and who you talked to?
Yeah, you know, I'd rather not get into that too deep right now. You know, I'm just really meeting with, you know, everybody, so I'd rather not get too deep into what I've been talking about.
Fair enough. I like the gamesmanship there.
Now, last question for you here, because I know you got to run. There's this big, one of the big stories this offseason has been Carson Wentz getting moved over from the Eagles to Indianapolis. That potentially puts Jalen Hurts in a spot to be the franchise quarterback for the Eagles. I know that's a guy you played with. Anybody who's curious about what type of player Jalen Hurts is, what would you have to say about him?
Yeah, you know, Jalen is such a great leader on and off the field. You know, he's someone that you love to have in the locker room. And he approaches the game at such a business-like level. You know, he's someone who's always prepared for anything that comes and happens on the field. You know, he's very impressive, and he has great composure, too, throughout a game. You know, he's not someone who gets, you know, too excited or too down on himself whenever he makes a good or bad play. You know, he stays locked in the whole time, and it's very impressive. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Jalen, you know, just in the 1 year that I got to play with him.
Creed Humphrey is the center at Oklahoma and very well could be the first center off the board in the draft come April. You can follow him on Twitter at Creed_Humphrey. Creed, we appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Joining us now is Alabama offensive lineman Alex Leatherwood. I would tell you where you can find him on Twitter, but you can't because he doesn't have a Twitter. He's keeping his mental health on point. Alex, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. And you?
I'm doing great. And I got to ask about that. What is the – how have you not gotten sucked in by the social media bug to this point?
I don't know. Social media's, like, never really been my thing. You know what I mean? Just a lot of people don't know what they're talking about. You know what I mean? Try to keep my peace and just go on about my business.
A smart man.
Did you ever have one, or did you decide to step away from it, or you just never got into it?
I did used to have a Twitter, but I didn't use it much. You know what I mean? So I just decided to just like do away with it.
Well,
that's so smart.
Yeah, we got a first round grade on Alex Leatherwood between the ears there. That's good. Yes. Now, Alex, you, of course, won the Outland Trophy. You are one of the top linemen in the country. I think everybody feels like you're likely a first round pick. And so there has been some discussion, it sounds like, that some people may think you should kick inside to guard and that's where you should play at. Would you welcome that, or do you have any sort of resistance to that, or any sort of pushback that says like, hey, come on, like I just won the Outland Trophy playing at tackle at Alabama in the SEC, and I think I've done a pretty good job at tackle. I think I can stay there. How do you approach that question about where you're going to play at the next level?
Right. I mean, just like you said, I mean, I just won the Outland at left tackle. I do believe my skill set and my abilities, like I'm the best suit for left tackle, you know what I mean? But I won't take away from my versatility to play anything on the offensive line. You know what I mean? I feel like I could be a center, a guard, tackle, no matter where you need me to play. But I am indeed at heart and at body a left tackle.
Why come back your senior season, especially in a year that had so many unpredictable and unexpected challenges?
Right. I came back just for, like, to be honest, the sole purpose of getting better and being a better player. You know what I mean? Also, I wanted to graduate. I wanted to win another national championship, because the season we had last season was just not the standard of what we were expecting. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to go back and, like, prove a lot to myself and just put more on tape because I knew I could show more. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to, like, capitalize on all the good things I did my junior season and take it to the next level as a senior.
What do you think? I mean, you've had a chance to play for Coach Saban for the full run there, and he, of course, is one of the most revered minds in football. What's the biggest thing you learned from Coach Saban at Alabama?
The biggest thing I learned from Coach Saban is just how to win, you know what I mean? How to win and the things that it takes to win, you know, staying true to the process and the things that you got to do to get to where you're trying to go, you know what I mean? And I'm super appreciative and so grateful just to, like, have been coached by him and learned the things I did. It was great.
You were a guy who was a highly touted recruit coming out of high school. You had a lot of attention on you back even then. You spent 4 years now, like, running through Alabama, having that spotlight there and playing in the SEC. Do you feel like all this time you've spent in the football spotlight at every level, like, that kind of better prepares you for what comes with the day-to-day attention and grind and intensity of the NFL?
Exactly, 1,000%. I mean, that was one of the main reasons why I went to Alabama, you know what I mean? Just because of the exposure that we get there being student athletes, and you're always in the spotlight, you know what I mean? So, like, you always have to be on your P's and Q's, and, like, you just get used to it. So, like, you know how to handle things better because you've been there before.
That's interesting, Bobby, because, you know, we've talked about guys like Sammy Watkins in the past, who I was told decided not to come to Dallas because he didn't want everything that came with it. It sounds like you would be very capable of embracing that. Have you had any conversations with the Cowboys?
I've had conversations with the Cowboys and really all 32 teams, but they've all been going great, to be honest, all the conversations I've had.
Okay, I've got a question for you. When you have a head coach like Nick Saban, you know, we talked to another guy, MJP, and because you're in the spotlight at Alabama and because you have a coach like Nick Saban, is there any head coach on the other side of a Zoom in the next couple of weeks that if you get asked to talk to is going to move the needle for you, in other words, or pinch yourself and say, wow, like, I'm doing this?
No, not really, to be honest, just because I'm prepared, you know what I mean, and I'm confident, so I'm going to go into every interview honest and prepared.
What was it like when Saban was in that living room talking to your parents, though, as a high schooler?
No, that being a high schooler, that was kind of surreal, you know what I mean? just knowing that I have the opportunity to play for somebody as highly talented and revered as him, and, like, I mean, he's the GOAT, you know what I mean? So it kind of was a surreal moment, but it was cool. It was really, really cool.
Alex, I'm sure you've heard this question a lot because I know it's a favorite of NFL scouts and front offices. And it sounds pretty basic, but it helps you to kind of look inside yourself and flesh it out as best you can. What is it about ball that you love? Why do you love football?
Just like the competition, you know what I mean? And although I do love football, what I love like specifically is just like the art of the position of being an O-lineman. You know what I mean? I feel like we're the most cerebral and technical position on the field. So just like that chase of like being perfect, you know what I mean? Getting all your steps right, playing like mental games with defenders, edge rushers and things like that. Just trying to be perfect in everything you do. That's what I love about it. I love the competition. I love the physicality. And I love that it's a team sport as well. Like you can't do it all on your own. You got to have like, I mean, not just in football, but more specifically offensive line. Like you got five dudes who have an assignment to, you know, accomplish. So just that, I mean, it's fun. It's great.
I love the authenticity and passion of that answer. It didn't feel canned. It felt very genuine. This is a guy that loves football, and Dallas has had an impressive line over the years. Have you talked to any of the Cowboys players, and have any of them stood out to you?
Not personally. I haven't talked to any Cowboys players, but I mean, of course, the offensive line, they stand out to me. Just the tradition and just like the tradition of that offensive line and what they do, what they've done over the past years. I mean, it's just like an inspiration. You know what I mean? Like they're the best in the league, and it's super fun and great to watch and learn from. You know, Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, Lyle Collins, all of them. I mean, great players.
Is there anybody specifically that you've studied while you've been at Alabama and just kind of tried to, I wouldn't say mold yourself after, because I know a lot of guys like to say, I'm me, you know, I'm not somebody else. But is there anybody else that you try and like pick up some things or see if you can learn some things from through study? Any players in particular?
Not in particular, but I mean, I watch a lot of tackles in the league. Tyron Smith, Trent Williams, David Bakhtiari. I mean, you know, like the all pros, like the great, like pro bowlers, you know what I mean? A couple of my teammates who play in the league now, Jonah Williams, Judge Wills, like those dudes, I watch them and just try to learn as much as I can and take away from all of their games, you know what I mean? And try to make it and tailor it to me and my skill set and what I can do with it. So I just try to be a sponge from everybody.
You know, if the Cowboys were to call your name, I'm sure you know Trayvon Diggs a little bit. What was he like when he was on your team?
Oh, yeah, Diggs. Diggs was great. Diggs is definitely a character. He's a great teammate. If you ask me, he has a lot of personality, a freak athlete, great player. And, yeah, I love him. That's my boy.
Now,
what about Patrick Surtain? That's a corner that Cowboys might also pick up the phone and call. What's your scouting report on him as a teammate?
As a teammate, I mean, you don't get any better than him. I mean, I got like a bunch of great teammates, but you can't get any better. Like he approaches, like the way he approaches practice and the way he approaches his work and his game, his craft. I mean, it's unbelievable. And he's been like that since he was a freshman when he first stepped on campus. I mean, he's a workhorse and he's a pro about what he does. So I feel like his transition is going to be seamless.
What challenges you most on the football field? What do you feel like you still need to improve at? What do you think that, you know, you feel like is not quite as polished as you want it to be and you feel like gives you a challenge and something to shoot for?
One thing I always try to work on, because it's always been a thing for me, is just hands. You know what I mean? My hands in the run game and in the pass game, just being more consistent about them being inside, where I put them, timing and things like that. But I feel like that's not just with me. I feel like that's with, like, all tackles, you know what I mean? Just having good eye-hand coordination, knowing timing, knowing your link and things like that. So that's one thing I always try to keep polishing. Like, you can never be too good at.
How has Duke helped you out with that? I know you're training with Duke Manyweather there at MJP.
Duke has helped out with that a lot. I mean, he knows a great deal about football and offensive line play. And just the drills we work, I mean, it really tunes in on, like that skill set and like how to use your hands better. You know what I mean? It just works. I mean, I can't really explain it, but it's great work. And I'm super grateful to be here working with him, learning from him, and like all the and all the other O-line dudes here, a bunch of top dudes here. And it's great to learn from him and all the other dudes here.
You know, with NCAA rules, you can only work on so many things as it relates to skills and the nuances that come with your position. How energized and excited, because you do seem like one of those guys who really loves football and you know, using words like loving the fact that it's technical and being perfect. How much do you love that now you can finesse your game and you can work on the nuances that make you a good offensive lineman with guys like Duke, who that's what they do. And they've got all pro guys that they've trained. It feels like that gets, you're the type of guy that gets up for that in the morning. Like that energizes you.
1,000%. And I mean, it's great, not just because like you get to work with Duke and it's like, because all the other guys he brings in that he works with who are also great players in the league, like you get to learn from them as well, like seasoned vets, like who've played the game, who've played against like the great DNs and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's cool. It's just great. I love it.
Do you have a mentor right now in the game? Has, in other words, is there an NFL player that you talk to or that has, get, like, you don't seem like one of those guys that necessarily needs a whole lot of direction, but is there someone that because it is such a small fraternity, this game of football and doing this is very different than what your family does for a living and your friends do for a living. Is there a mentor that you reach out to that really just infuses you with some good brain food?
I wouldn't say a mentor, but one of my closest friends and ex-teammates, Judgeick Wills, he plays left tackle for the Browns. And he was a right tackle at Bama while I played left, but he transitioned to left tackle. So just talking to him about his experience and the things that he's done over his rookie season, the things that he's learned and all that good stuff. We talk about that a lot. And I feel like I learned a lot from him, just from him being a rookie and his experience with it. So.
Well, Alex Leatherwood is an exciting player and one that you should hear, I would guess, on night one of the draft in April. You should hear his name getting called. Alex, we appreciate you so much and best of luck.
Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all.
Joining us now is Coastal Carolina defensive end Teron Jackson. You can follow him on Twitter at Teron_Jackson. Teron, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing blessed, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm excited to talk to you because I think you are the first prospect we have ever interviewed that graduated with a bachelor's degree in mathematics. What had you?
Honestly, gives me anxiety.
I know.
Almost didn't graduate the University of Texas, and I had 2 degrees because I failed math not once, not twice, but 3 times and finished up in community college. That's how bad I am at math.
Here's how bad I am at math is that I have, I've got my app here, PhotoMath, that I use to help me with my children's math equations to make sure that, so I just take a picture of it and it solves it. So I'm curious, as somebody who's pursuing football, what it seems very outside the beaten path. I wouldn't expect a lot of football players were, majoring in mathematics. So what had you going there?
I think it's kind of a combination of some of the things that I did when I was growing up. I don't know, I just always loved numbers, but growing up, my family's big in construction. My pops a contractor. So, you know, doing different measurements and stuff, you know, cutting different, like wood and stuff. The measurement, just being able to cut the math in your head just speeds up things. So I think that's kind of some of the stuff that, you know, kind of took me toward that path. But, you know, I just always been a numbers guy, honestly.
God, I mean, the cool thing about that is like that also says GM to me when your playing days are over. Is that something you'd ever consider?
I mean, honestly, it's something that never really crossed my mind, honestly. But I definitely could, you know, see that in the future. But, you know, it's just something I never really thought about, to be honest.
Now, as you're preparing for the draft, I mentioned there Coastal Carolina. There's probably not a lot of guys that fans know who have come from Coastal Carolina, but you guys really came onto the scene last year, had a big primetime game against BYU. So you guys are really starting to build a strong reputation, but you're kind of one of the forerunners here for it. So talk to us a little bit about just coming from a small school and still trying to, or not a small school, but a lesser known football program and trying to establish yourself and help teams understand like, hey, we play good football over here too. Believe what you see on the tape.
I definitely say it gives me, you know, that extra chip on my shoulder, you know, working with guys that, you know, get a little bit more notoriety from that standpoint. But You know, football is football. So, you know, I go into it, you know, just telling Jim, you know, what you see on tape is, you know, what you're going to get. You know, you're going to get a guy that's flying around all the time, that's playing hard, you know, playing for his teammates, you know, uplifting guys when they're down, you know, they make miss a play or something like that, just trying to uplift them. But, you know, just showing them that just because, you know, we may come from a smaller conference, you know, we still have a lot of guys that can compete at any level.
Is it fun being a part of a school that's building something? Because even Coastal Carolina in baseball has really been coming around in recent years. Is it fun to be a part of building something there?
Oh, for sure. It's amazing, you know, to be a part of the groundwork for, you know, Coastal Carolina. You know, the legacy is just starting, but, you know, just to be a part of something that's growing like Coastal is now, you know, we first came in the Sun Belt, you know, we was 3-9, then 5-7, 5-7, trying to build our way up every year. You know, the year before last year, kind of seeing the, you know, the product. You know, we lost 7 games, but 3 or 4 that game, those games we had lost for like 1 point, 3 points. And then this year, just, you know, busting onto the scene and, you know, winning our, you know, conference. It means a lot to me, you know, and the guys that I came in with, you know, it's something that we definitely was working towards. And for us to be able to lay that brick, you know, for future teams, it's amazing.
Now, one of my this is going to be a trivia question for Jane, because I know that Teron's going to know it instantly. But Jane, Teron is from Aiken, South Carolina, and went to Silver Bluff High School. You know who else fits those that bio that currently plays in the NFL? Big time Cowboys connection here. Mm. He knows it. He already knows the answer. You want to go ahead and share it with her?
Not DeMarcus. Now he was in.
That's DeMarcus it.
Where?
DeMarcus Lawrence.
Oh!
See, DeMarcus Lawrence. So,
DeMarcus was Birmingham. Never mind.
Having been a guy who was in Aiken and went to Silver Bluff like DeMarcus Lawrence, is that a guy that you studied at all when you were coming along?
Oh, yeah, definitely coming through high school, you know, and everything. You know, he was always, you know, kind of the guy that my coach, you know, pushed me towards to look at as far as film and everything. So he's definitely a guy that I've been watching, you know, since I was kind of younger.
I know he's come back to the area some in recent years. Have you ever got a chance to meet him?
No, I haven't gotten a chance to meet him yet. You know, I'm actually cool with some of his nieces and nephews, cousins. I went to school with him, but, you know, I haven't got a chance to meet him formally. I've talked to him before, but now I haven't got a chance to meet him face-to-face before.
We've talked to a few guys who have talked to DeMarcus Lawrence, so I love seeing that he's taking on the mentor role. What has he said to you? What's been the feedback for a guy from his hometown?
You know, you just got to keep pushing, man. You know, just stay steadfast, you know, be cautious of the details from that nature and just, you know, do what you love.
Now, you were at Senior Bowl, and I know everybody at Senior Bowl got to talk to run, you know, the gauntlet with all the teams. So you did get to talk to the Cowboys. How did that go, and what would you think about being able to play for them?
The meeting went very well with the Cowboys. You know, I gave them a little bit about DeMarcus Lawrence. Told them they drafted me. I'm definitely going to be coming for DeMarcus. I love, you know, coming to compete with a guy that, you know, you watch when you're growing up. So it definitely went well. And, you know, to get the opportunity to go play with them would definitely be special.
One of my favorite notes about a player, you know, guys always pick numbers for different reasons. I know J.C. Horn wore number 1 at South Carolina just because he said it was cold. He said it's just a great number. But I know you've got the number 9 that you wore at Coastal Carolina. I know that means a lot to you. Tell people about why you wear the number 9.
So I wore the number 9 because of my brother. My brother actually passed to leukemia when I was 9 years old. You know, football was always something that kind of brought us together. Just seeing him go through a fight with cancer and stuff, you know, he was a guy that never complained. He was always smiling. You know, he always had it on his face. And I just try to embrace that. You know, when I play football, you know, I'm always the guy that's trying to uplift everybody. And not just on the field, even outside of the field. You know, if they have problems, you know, I want to be that guy that guys can lean on. Just being a good captain, you know, being a good leader and role model.
Is that your main drive in pursuing the NFL is your brother?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, like I said, that's one thing that always brought us together. You know, we love football. So that's definitely my main driving force, you know, for playing football.
How exciting is it to play at a place like Coastal Carolina, get on the phone with a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence, and now find yourself on Zoom calls with GMs and head coaches in the NFL?
It's amazing. You know, when I was younger, you know, me and my cousins growing up playing outside, playing football, you know, watching different games and stuff, you see the stuff going on, but You know, it's just something that you dream of. Like, man, I'm going to be there one day, you know. And then every year, you know, once I started playing football, just building towards it. And then finally, you know, you see some of the fruits of your labor, you know. Most of the time, you can't see it when you're working. But I'm to that point now that I can, you know, kind of see a little bit of the work coming. So, man, it's great. You know, it's just a blessing, man. I just got to thank God for the opportunity that I'm at now, and, you know, to be able to even be in the place that I am now.
Where do you feel more natural in the defensive line?
I feel comfortable in other positions, but I would have to say in the 4-3 scheme, probably a defensive end, and then in the 3-4 outside linebacker.
When you talked to the Cowboys, did they express to you where they saw you? Did they see you as a guy who stood up, or did they see you with your hand in the dirt, rushing from like a wide nine? Did they talk to you about that any?
Not really. You know, they kind of just wanted to, you know, just flash who I was as a person, and then kind of my understanding and knowledge of football. They flashed a couple questions there.
I think that...
And was that in a Zoom call, or was that like a... Where was that?
So at the Senior Bowl, you know, we meet with the edge team. You know, we just meet with the scouts. Some teams recorded it, but I can't remember if they had a recording or not. But, you know, I was just talking face-to-face with the scouts there. You know, they were just picking my brain in that fashion.
I think that last year, if you were to just poll college football fans of like, hey, what was the chippiest football game? I think they would probably say it was that BYU-Coastal Carolina game where things got a little intense. There was some aggression there. Do you think that was a good representation of the type of intensity you might see on Sundays?
Oh, yeah. I didn't feel like that game was probably the closest representation, you know. The energy that we had for that game was amazing, man. You know, I'll never forget, you know, they came in and they changed the game 3 days away. You know, we were supposed to be playing Liberty. We was already fired up to play Liberty because those were formerly our rivals. But, you know, getting a chance to play BYU, you know, and then going into the game, all of the people that doubted us, you know, we seen something like a little hype video our coach made for us where – and everybody's like, oh, they're grown men, and, you know, culture, they're playing kids. Like, you know, they're not going to amount to anything. They're not going to be able to beat these guys. So, you know, it was amazing just to get out there and compete with my brothers, man, and just put the world on notice, you know, that culture is a really good football team.
What's the biggest question you think teams have had for you during this process? Everybody's always got, you know, a targeted area that they need to work on before they get to the next level. What's the thing teams most want to know about you?
I think, especially, my size that I'm at now, you know, I've had that question of, he's a tweener, where he's going to play at. But in terms of playing in the 3-4, a lot of teams have told me, you know, they want to see if I can drop and, you know, in the coverage and everything like that. And I'll be able to show that at my pro day. In terms of the 4-3, you know, I've heard from teams, you know, just being consistent sometimes with my footwork and everything. But you know, that's pretty much what I've been hearing. And I've heard flexibility, you know, not this year so much, but, you know, my past year. So, you know, I try to combat that with doing yoga and different things like that. But, you know, currently that's probably the thing that I've been hearing the most.
When they ask you about the size, do you say, hey, Elvis Dumervil played at 5'11 for like a decade. Y'all chill out.
Yeah, man, I try to work that, man, because honestly, if you can play football, you can play football, you know, at any size, man, you know. I love when I see the smaller guys, you know, the underdogs coming out and dominating the guys that's twice their size, because I'm like, man, if you can play, you can play. It doesn't matter how big you are.
What do you think's your most pro-ready trait?
I'd say my best pro-ready trait, you know, in terms of, you know, on the field, is definitely probably my hands. I feel like this year is one thing I definitely try to key on is getting better with my hands. You know, I talked to some of my coaches and stuff from previous years, and they was like, you know, don't just rely on that pure just athleticism. You know, they want to see me be able to bend around the corner and, you know, use my hands. So going into this year, that's one thing that I definitely focused on. I feel like I got better at.
You seem really coachable in the sense that, you know, even as we're sitting here and talking, I love the guys that can assess their game, talk about what the knocks have been, and then going out of their way to address those. Is that a fair assessment of you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm definitely coachable, man. I literally, like, after every year, I talk with my coaches and I see, you know, what I need to work on, what part of my game, and, you know, how can I improve it? You know, going to this year, my coach said he wants me to, you know, get a little faster. You know, he wants to see me that flexibility. So I said, you know, okay, I dropped 10 pounds, you know, and I started getting into yoga, you know, just working on the little things that he said, you know, and I definitely feel like I improved, you know, in those areas.
You are, we mentioned about being coachable. I know for a fact that you are because our good buddy here on the show, we've talked to Brandon Tucker, has talked about that. What have you been able to learn from Tuck while you've been working at MJP?
Oh, I've learned a lot from Coach Tuck, man. I love him, man. He's taught me a lot, you know, not just about my position of previous DN, but he's taught me about D-tackle stuff, outside linebacker stuff. And a lot of that knowledge, you know, I didn't have previously, you know, because it's just a new position. But I've learned a lot from Tuck, man.
Has he made sure to take you to Hutchins Barbecue yet?
Man, it's crazy because we were just talking about this last week. He said he was going to get me and one of the other guys I work out with, Ham, and he's going to take us to it. So, you know, I'm going to see how good it is. I've heard from some of the other guys this is good. So
they may wait till after pro day because Tuck will like to just like load up and binge guys, and you don't want to put on that extra 5 pounds, man.
I can't do that.
No. Teron Jackson is a defensive end from Coastal Carolina and one of the really exciting, I'd say, sleepers in this class, a guy that a lot of people are excited about. You can follow him on Twitter at Teron_Jackson. Teron, thanks so much, man. Best of luck.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Joining us now is Cal defensive back Cameron Bynum. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at @CamBeasy_. So there's that little underscore at the end. Was Cam Beasy itself already taken, Cameron?
Yes, I had to find a way. CamBeasy24 was taken. I was like, all right, I got to put an underscore. I was mad.
What a pain, man. All right, so you were one of the few who did choose to, or not one of the few, you were one of the ones who decided to play this season, even though with the shortened season there with Cal and everything going on with COVID. Do you have any regrets about deciding to play? Are you glad you did? I know we talked to Paulson Adebo at Stanford. He said he was glad he didn't. He felt good about the decision because there was a little bit of stop-start, and he thinks it would have thrown him out of his rhythm. Do you have any regrets, or do you feel good about the way you handled it?
No, I have no regrets at all. My mentality, once they uncanceled the season and let us play in the fall, I was thinking, if I can play football, I'm going to play football. I'd be a lot better off as a football player, actually getting those reps and being able to practice for those months and play however many games we're able to. And I'd feel a lot better about myself doing that than just training an extra couple months. So I was like, if I have a chance to play some football, I'm doing it regardless.
How disruptive was it even when the state of California wasn't letting people practice at their facilities at times? Was Cal in the mix of that?
Yeah, in the Bay Area, it was super strict. So, like, yeah. The entire time, we didn't have a locker room. We were changing outside in the tunnel. We didn't have a weight room, so we had to move the weight room out to our practice field. And, yeah, basically, we had position meetings outside. They moved TVs. It was 50 degrees at 6 a.m. before our practices and stuff, and we're out there doing meetings, shivering cold. So we had to get it done because we couldn't go inside the building at all. So like my whole senior year, didn't see my locker room, didn't have a locker, everything. It was pretty crazy, but at the end of the day, we got to play football too, so it was fun.
That's fascinating.
How important was it for you to be able to go compete at the Senior Bowl with some of the limited exposure that other guys are getting this year?
I think that was huge. Just like, especially for me, I only was able to get 4 games in at Cal. And I know a lot of other people got a lot of games canceled. Some people opted out. So just having that chance to show your skill right before the whole draft process starts up, that's probably super big for the evaluation process, them being able to see you this close to when they're drafting you and just being able to compete against the best. That was my favorite part, being able to compete against the guys that you see on TV every week and be able to compete at the end of the day.
You were obviously a lot up close and personal with a lot of scouts, GMs, and coaches. Was there one that really stood out for you, an experience?
I would just say with the Miami staff, because that was my team for the game. So, and I had my college coach that coached me in college for 3 years. He was the secondary coach for the Dolphins. So that was just cool being with him again and being familiar with the defense and with all the terminology and everything. That was really helpful to me, and it felt like I was back home again at Cal, so that was probably the best experience I had there.
Who gave you the most trouble at Senior Bowl practice week? Who's the biggest handful?
Eskridge.
Oh, Dwayne Eskridge at Western Michigan, yeah.
Real good.
Now, when you got to there, I know everybody at Senior Bowl was able to talk to all the teams. We're obviously Cowboys-centric here. Did you get a chance to talk to the Cowboys, and how did that go?
It went really well. I was able to talk to every team except the Rams. They weren't there. But talking to them, a lot of scouts that I've seen in my area before that I've met. So it was just cool being able to catch up and interview process was long there. So I was glad I was able to talk to everybody for sure. I was able to get a good conversation and interview with the Cowboys.
How would you describe the conversation with the Cowboys?
I would say kind of more personable than the other ones because they've met me a lot of times before. So they weren't asking as many like background questions because they've seen me and been in my school a lot, especially those scouts that were talking to me. They've met me a couple of times. So we were more talking about kind of like more life stuff and about our defenses and just giving an overview of the whole week and stuff versus just asking like background type of thing.
Where do you feel most comfortable at the next level in terms of scheme fit? Are you a guy who would feel better about being in a cover three system? Are you somebody who wants to play some press man? Where do you feel best at the next level, you think?
I feel like I could do it all. That's something I was able to do in college, is play any cover three. We played a lot of cover four also, but also did a lot of man. A lot of our cover threes turned into man. So I think I pride myself in being versatile. So whether I play corner or safety or nickel, I feel like I'll be best in any scheme because I prepare myself super well.
Did Dallas give you any inclination of what they kind of view you as? Do they view you as a boundary guy? Do they look at you as a safety?
No, they didn't tip their hat on any of that. But I know every team asked me if I'm willing to play other positions and move around, and that's something I'd be willing to do any time of the day.
There have been a lot of great players who have graduated from Cal. One of my favorites, of course, is Cam Jordan, Mr. Personality. If you had to power rank your top five Cal football alums, who would they be?
Ooh, that's tough. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers might be at the top. He might be one of the best ever after Brady. Keenan Allen, I know he's a dog. Deshaun Jackson. Namdi. And I say Jalen Hawkins and Ashton Davis at number five.
Oh, you give an Ashton
to me. There's so many that have come out of there.
Exactly. So I was like, I got to put my own teammates there.
Evan Weaver's going to be upset, man.
I got to go with the DB.
Well, what do you think is still the biggest question in these conversations you have with teams and things like that? What do you think is the biggest question teams still have for you?
Probably versatility, just because I've only played corner my whole career. And I don't see that as something that's put me behind the curve at all, just because I think corner is the hardest position on the whole defense. And if I'm able to play corner, I can easily move in at safety and guard slower tight ends. And me playing corner this whole time, I for sure can cover. And if I move into nickel, I'll be able to play even better. So I think my versatility is something that hasn't been showed off much in the past, but something I know I'll do fine at.
What is the biggest thing that you yourself still look at and say, I'd like to be better at that? I want to improve that.
I'll say versatility. In the Senior Bowl, I went and played the slot a little. Had a little trouble the first day just because it's something I've never really done too much. Besides taking a couple of practice reps, if it's a man coverage, I go guard the slot. So I'd say just slot coverage, just knowing those different angles and different route tree coming from there is something I want to get more reps at.
Now, I know you've been working out there at MJP. Clay Mack's been out there, I know, too. And so are you working with Clay? And if so, how's that been?
Yep, I'm working with him multiple times a week, and it's been super well, going super well. And I think he's a great coach, just preparing us how to move and getting us all of our functional movements. Like, people think, like, you just go out there and just do the drills and just practice the combine drills just for these couple months. But he's teaching us, breaking down every single movement, every angle. So whatever drill they put us through, pro day, I'll be able to do well just because my functional movement is tip-top shape. So that's what I like about him. He's a real technician and technical coach.
Now, we mentioned that you did get a chance to talk to the Cowboys. How would you feel about potentially ending up in that? You're in the Dallas area right now. How would you feel about calling this home?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm for sure going to live out here, buy a house out here long-term. So,
really? You liked it that much?
So it would be a blessing to go anywhere, but at the end of the day, if it's Dallas, I'll be happy.
Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, have you been to Dallas before and lived here for a while, or is you just wanted to buy a house based on just your limited time here?
Yeah, so last year I came out here to train, get a 3-week head start at MJP. So I came here last year during my winter break, train here. So I wanted to see, okay, this is the place I want to train, and they're actually super good, and be able to train and do the workouts for like a year before I get here, so I don't have to waste time trying to learn. But my time is here. So that time, I did a bunch of exploring, went and looked at model homes, looked at property and all that. And I was like, yeah, this is it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So this year I did it again and I'm like, yeah, I'm for sure living out here.
So you could be playing for the Titans maybe. And you would still try and have like an off season home here or something.
Oh yeah. I want to buy land here as soon as I
can. Oh, look at that.
You literally have been living in California, like by the ocean in the Bay Area, and you still choose Dallas.
Yeah, because $2 gas. I smile putting gas on my car. Back then, I was filling up my Nissan for like $65.
That's amazing.
That's good stuff. Well, Cam Bynum, you can follow him on Twitter. It is at Cam Beasy _. Don't Cam Beasy 24. Don't Cam Beasy. Somebody else already stole those. But you can find Cameron Bynum on Twitter at Cam Beasy _. Cameron, thanks so much and good luck during this process.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Joining us now is Northwestern offensive tackle Rashawn Slater. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at RDSL8R. See that? SL8R Slater. You get it? Rashawn, how you doing?
Doing well. How about you guys?
Doing great. And now the thing I want to knock out first, I want to give you a chance to talk about, because I know I've been screaming it and other people have been screaming it for you, including Duke. Why is it, in your opinion, in your own words, why is it that you are not just a guard, you can play tackle at the next level?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I played my entire career at Northwestern. You know, in the Big Ten, had the opportunity to go against a lot of guys who ended up being high picks who were doing well in the NFL. I've definitely got the film, and I've got the technique, too. Maybe I don't have the elite length that some teams are looking for in tackles, but I do have the technique and the know-how that, despite that, I'm able to play really well.
Is that anything that, in talking with teams, you've had to make that case for? I'm sure the teams have their own ideas. You're not going to sweat, but have they asked you about that yourself just to kind of see, all right, let's see how he explains this himself?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely comes up. Most teams I've talked to do see me as a tackle. Really what they value is the versatility I bring. Like, I have no doubt that I can play really well at guard too. But most teams and I are on the same page with that.
I remember the first time I watched your film, it was after Duke had told me to watch you going up against Ohio State and Chase Young. And I remember just being struck. I called him and I was like, he is so much stronger than I would have guessed just looking at him out there. Do you think you, in terms of just with people talking about, oh, he doesn't have the link to do this, and my own preconceived notions of, oh, he doesn't look like he'd be a mauler, do you think that drives you, all those sorts of different doubts, does that drive you to excel in certain areas?
Yeah, absolutely. All the time. That's one of the biggest things I've been working on with Duke is just, people are always going to be questioning my length is what it comes down to. So, like, all I can do is control my technique, my strength, control what I can't control. And so we've been working a lot on in the run game too, just like working on leverage and stuff like that to be able to make up for anything.
Now, you were one of the guys that opted out this year. Walk me through how you created personal structure and more importantly, stayed motivated, as there were so many questions, I think, for a lot of these guys as they made decisions about what the season was going to look like, if it was going to get played. And then you see it getting played. And there you are going and working at a training facility. How hard was that? How did you stay motivated? And more importantly, do you think it was a good decision now looking back?
Yeah, absolutely. I was all in on the season. I was playing. I think we practiced for about two days of fall camp before they canceled the season. And from there, I made the decision that I wanted to come, start investing in my NFL career here at NJP and with Duke, and I've been here since then. So I was training for about 2 weeks when they reinstated it, and at that point it really came down to, I really felt confident in the training I was getting. I was already seeing a lot of improvements, getting coaching, stuff like that. And with all the uncertainty in college football, I just decided to, stay on that path. And so, no, I really haven't had any regrets with it. Northwestern ended up having an awesome season, and I'm so happy for those guys. But the way I saw it is, I'm taking that step, into the NFL, and from here on out, I have no room for regret. Everything I'm doing now is gonna, I'm working towards that ultimate goal of having that great rookie season. So that's been the focus, and that's been my motivation this whole time.
It's fascinating because we may not see a season like that again as we see the vaccine rollouts, and we're seeing, more of this move towards herd immunity. Mm-hmm. So this to me was such an interesting season. And like I said, it's so hard to make a decision when you don't have all the information in front of you. But when, to your point, you know, the NCAA only allows so much time to work on technique and the nuances that come with your position. How far ahead do you think you are as a player, because you've been training since what, you said June?
Yeah, I've been out here since August, or working with Duke and MJP, and it's unbelievable. Like, you know, while those guys are playing a season, like that's definitely some positives that come from playing a season. But I've been down here working with, you know, the best of the best, and it's been like very one-on-one, especially in the fall. And so I feel really confident. You know, I've been eating the nutrition plans and working with a therapist, doing mobility, stuff like that. So it's all kind of just adds together, and you stack day after day. And it's a lot of, you know, added time just investing in myself. And so it's been awesome.
How does your body feel not having some of that live work? Do you think it's benefited, you know, cause when you think of high school and college and sort of the wear and tear, do you think there's been an advantage there as well?
Yeah, I think so. My body feels outstanding. And I've just been working so much on my body as far as like body composition and mobility too. So, you know, it's feeling really good.
Now, when you talk about controlling what you can control, what is it that you're, I guess, most still looking to get under control? Where do you feel like there's still a deficiency or something you need to work towards, or something you want to, maybe not a deficiency, but something you want to polish up or make stronger that you think you're going to have to prepare yourself for at the next level?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. Like, some of the things I've been focusing on a lot with Duke is changing direction and space, working on, like, driving off my backside leg, getting out of my stance more efficiently and getting good hand fits in the run game. And just like finding little areas to switch my game up just to, you know, be able to keep like whoever I'm blocking guessing as far as different types of sets, different kinds of hand usage and stuff like that.
Now, we are Cowboys focused here, and I know you're from the Sugar Land area, Houston area there. Did you grow up a Cowboys fan, or were you Texans, or who'd you cheer for growing up?
Really, I never was super loyal to any team. But for me, when I started like falling in love with the game, I started becoming like attracted to like really good linemen, really good lines. And so there's a few teams I followed, and Cowboys is definitely one of them. Watched a ton of, you know, Tyron Smith, just trying to learn from his game and stuff like that. So yeah, that'd be really cool.
Is that a team that, you've been able to talk to at all during this process? And is that a place you'd like to end up potentially?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd be blessed to go anywhere, but you know, Cowboys would be amazing. Haven't really talked to him yet, but it's still pretty early in the process, I feel like.
Now, I know one of the big things, one of the things that you are passionate about on social media is hyping up your teammate, Greg Newsom. A lot of people are starting to get him on the radar too, and it looks like Northwestern could have two highly drafted players there. What is it that makes Greg such an elite player and a guy that's going to succeed at the next level, you think?
He's just such an awesome competitor, man. Like, you look at this season, shortened season, and on top of that, he wasn't even able to play every single game, and he's still, in the time he was able to play, you know, was just consistently dominant. And you look at a guy like that who didn't have the same time to prepare, really, as everyone else, and he made it count even more when he was out there. So I have a ton of confidence in Greg as a defender. You know, I don't know too much about DB technique, but from what I've heard from our receivers and everything, like, he's super detailed the way he goes about, you know, covering people. So I think he's going to be great.
Well, you can follow Rashawn on Twitter and Instagram. As I said, it's RDSL8R. And with the Cowboys picking at 10 and Rashawn being in that top 10 conversation, he very well manned up with a star on his helmet. So get to know the guy. Rashawn, we appreciate you, man, and best of luck.
Sir, thank you all for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, a lot of great players there that we just talked to, a lot of interesting people. I'll tell you who I was really impressed with. I loved Alex Leatherwood. That guy's sharp. He's great. That's somebody who, you know, maybe could be in the 44 range when the Cowboys pick. If they don't go offensive lineman there in the first round, maybe they look for a Tyron replacement a little bit later on. So those are names certainly to know over the next couple weeks, and we're going to keep talking to guys, keep finding guys that you can hear from heading up to the draft. And as we sign off here, just get Dak done. You know, that's all that matters is that sign Dak Prescott.
And a special thanks to the Michael Johnson Performance Center for making these guys available.
Yes, especially Jessica. Thank you, Jessica, for all your help there.